You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. For more information, visit studylegalenglish.com. Hello and welcome to the Study Legal English podcast, episode 115. I'm your host, Louise, and today we will be listening to my interview with Martin Koppa. Martin is a judge who works at the regional court in Brno in the Czech Republic. He studied law, he did a PhD in law, he worked at the Czech Constitutional Court and the Supreme Administrative Court as an assistant, he worked at the European Court of Human Rights, and he also has some experience as a lawyer. In fact, he worked for the biggest law firm in the Czech Republic before becoming a judge. So in today's interview, we talk about his career and he gives us loads of resources that have helped him to get where he is today and which could certainly help you, my listeners, with your legal English and your legal career. All of the links, of course, which are mentioned in the show, will be in the show notes and also over on my website. Just go to studylegalenglish.com/episode115. So I interviewed Martin. I really struggle with his name. I'm sorry, Martin. It's Martin in English and the Czech pronunciation is really, really difficult for me. But I interviewed him in person when I was in Brno in November when I was invited to do some co-teaching at the University of Masaryk. Thank you to Hannah Kalus, who very kindly arranged for me to meet Martin. Now, I have to say, I'm not sure if this is actually allowed, my listeners, but Martin showed me a courtroom and I actually got to sit in a judge's chair where, of course, I issued my verdict, which was, yes, this is definitely very cool. For those of you who follow me on Instagram, I posted some pics on my account of me and Martin over in the courtroom. You can find me on Instagram at Legal Englisher. Now, before we get started, I want to firstly say a welcome to all of my new members who recently signed up over my Black Friday sale weekend. Welcome. Good choice, ladies and gentlemen. Well done for signing up. For those of you who are interested in my site membership, head over to studylegalenglish.com/pricing for further info. Secondly, I have to apologize for my mispronunciation of Brno. In this interview that's upcoming right now that you're about to listen to, and also in the last podcast episode where I visited the Constitutional Court. And in fact, the whole time when I was visiting Brno, I kept pronouncing it Bruno instead of Brno. And everyone was basically just too polite to correct me on my mispronunciation. I'm sure you listeners have been in the same situation where you've probably been pronouncing a word incorrectly, probably for a long time. And then one day someone says to you, that's not quite how you pronounce it. For example, recently a non-native speaker said to me, in hindsight, and I said, oh, you have to pronounce it hindsight. And they said, oh, thank you, Louise. I've been mispronouncing that word for a long time. Anyway, my point being, I've been mispronouncing Brno. That's the correct pronunciation. In this episode, I keep referring to it as Bruno. So Brno is the correct way to say this city name. B-R-N-O. That's all. So now let's go.
So I'm very pleased to be joined here today by Martin or Martin. Sorry, Martin, but the pronunciation of your name. I can't speak Czech, unfortunately. Welcome.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Thank you. So let's get straight into the questions. Martin, how did you get to here where you are today?
Well, first of all, you make it sound as if I was some sort of a rock star and as if this was an obligatory goal for every lawyer to become one day. I certainly don't feel that way. To be honest with you, well, I became a judge, which was my dream. It became my dream a couple of years ago. And I became a judge after a lot of failures, to be honest with you, because I had to go through, I've counted like 12 or 13 competitions for a judicial position, and I failed in all of them miserably until the very last one, which actually was a competition for this particular court where I wanted to be a judge the most. So actually, the dream came true. I was lucky in the end, even though I must admit that I was actually second in this competition, which meant that I won for me personally. But I was a lawyer in Prague back then, and actually my personal life sort of went through a turmoil, if I may put it that way, because I just broke up with my girlfriend, and I worked in this big law firm in a world where I felt I didn't belong to, sort of, and in the very bad times for me personally and professionally, I actually won in a competition and got to a position where I wanted to be the most.
Yes, I understand what you mean. Sometimes when you go through those difficult times, there's hopefully always light at the end of the tunnel, and perhaps it enabled you to start a new chapter here.
Yeah, you have to find bright side on your misfortunes.
Yes. And in Prague, you were working as a lawyer in a big law firm?
Yeah, it's actually the biggest one in the Czech Republic, even Czechoslovakia, if I may put it that way, because I still consider myself Czechoslovak. I was born in Czechoslovakia. And the law firm where I worked also has one of its branches in Bratislava. And it's a really big one. There were more than 200 lawyers in that firm, and we did a lot of various things from all areas of law, and I felt like the world of big law, as they say in the US, was not the world that I felt like I belonged to. I thought it'd be good to leave it, and I went back to Brno, where I actually still worked as an attorney, but in a law firm of my brother. Afterwards, I got a call one day, and after the competition, even when I was second, actually, a vice president of this court, he told me, well, you're going to have to wait for a year or two, and let's just hope it's going to work, because it's still not certain that you will become a judge, even though you were second in the competition. So I was still thinking that I have a couple of months or years ahead of me, being an attorney. But then one day he called me and he told me, look, there's going to be two of you appointed. So, well, in summer, you're going to see the president make the judicial oath, and in September, hopefully, you're going to start. And I think he called me in May 2020. And, well, 10 minutes before that, I wouldn't expect that I'd be a judge in 4 months from then.
So you went through this process to become a judge. Talk me through that process. How did you actually become a judge?
To put it into perspective, in Czech Republic, still, I think that our law right now is very deficient in terms of appointment and selecting future judges. We're going to have new law from the 1st of January, I think it's going to be enforced. But right now, I will simplify it a bit, but it's actually up to the regional courts how they pick their own judges. And to be honest with you, we have 8 different regimes, depending on the presidents of the regional courts. Judges are selected the way that the presidents say, if I put it really simply. And like I told you in the beginning, I went through 12 or 13 competitions, and all of them were different in some regard. The previous competitions, they were more general. They were focused on other areas of law than the ones that they were actually looking for, which I didn't understand a lot, but that was the case. And to be honest with you, since I lacked practice in criminal and civil law, I just didn't succeed. Afterwards, in 2019, there was a competition for administrative judges at regional court in Brno, and we did the test where I succeeded finally, because it was specialized and I knew what was going on. And this test, it's not easy, because you have like 30 small cases, and you have multiple choice to choose from, but only one answer is correct, but only like 90 minutes to solve them all. So it's, you know, just enough time to read it and decide quickly and go to the next case. So it's pretty hard. But I was lucky, because I knew from practice where the cases were leading and what the correct answers were. And afterwards, we had to write a judgment. We got a file, and we had, if I'm not mistaken, 4 hours to write a judgment in that case. And then we had an interview. And there was a panel of judges from this court, and actually even from Supreme Administrative Court. They were interviewing us on our our values and also on certain practical aspects of being a judge. And what I think helped me a lot, like I can only assume that, was being an attorney before that, actually. So even though I felt, especially in that big law firm, that it was a world where I didn't belong, it actually gave me the experience which maybe got me extra points in that competition eventually. So even though it was a pretty much negative experience, it was positive in this regard that I could demonstrate experience from practice that the other candidates didn't have.
That's interesting you say that. Sometimes at the time in your life where you feel like you don't belong in that position or it's difficult and you don't quite see the reason for it, later in life it could actually be a really helpful experience. I remember when I was studying law, I didn't really enjoy my law degree, I have to say. But obviously I'm really pleased that I did study law. There are so many different areas and so many different job opportunities that really it's a challenge to find where you belong. But then eventually if you do, then, or when you do, then that's a very fulfilling experience, and the law allows you to do that.
That's absolutely right.
So your process of becoming a judge, you went through this process where you had to kind of do these sort of tests, multiple choice tests, writing a judgment, and you went on to the next stage, which was to have this interview. And so then I understand that you came second in that, and you expected that it would be like, I don't know, a year, a couple of years until you became a judge. When was it? How long after you found out?
I was lucky because actually it took 6 months after they told me I was second that I would be appointed in summer and I would start judging. Before that, they told me it could take up to, well, maybe even 2 years. We now have the new law adopted, which is going to come in force in January. And if I wasn't appointed before this law entering into force, then I would actually not become a judge and I would have to go through the new rules that were adopted by this new law. So I was scared that there would be this new law which would erase all my chances.
Wow.
And it was pretty adrenaline-like.
Yes. So then, but you became a judge in a really interesting or a very challenging time, I imagine, because you mentioned, you know, it was the summer 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic. How was that?
Well, to be honest, the pandemic, even though it was terrible, of course, and I don't want to, you know, to say as if nothing happened, but to be honest with you, at least in the beginning, it didn't affect our work that much, because in the administrative judiciary where I work, we don't have as many hearings as they do in criminal and civil cases, and actually, I think even majority of our cases, they are decided, as we say in the Czech Republic, at the table, that you don't actually have to go to the hearing room. And so we could actually start working. The only measure that was adopted was that we could work more from our home offices, which many of my colleagues did. But to be honest with you, I spent most of my time here at the court. And, well, I simply started deciding. I didn't have as many hearings in the beginnings, but afterwards, when all the measures loosened, we started to have hearings with face masks. Some of my colleagues, they even had online hearings. But I didn't yet.
Okay. Yeah. And so online hearings, they are happening, but you haven't had the chance yet to, have the joy of a Zoom court hearing.
They are happening. You can have the online hearing, of course, but usually the colleagues of mine that had online hearings, they said that the biggest problems they had to face were with the connection, actually. That, well, the software was okay, you know, all the preparations were okay for that, but then suddenly either the attorneys or the court connection, they were not the best. That was the biggest problem.
I know you're big on social media. I don't know if you saw the cat lawyer.
Of course I
did. Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the things that might happen. Yeah, there were many funny cases concerning online presence.
Yes, I think the worst nightmare of that lawyer appearing as a cat in a court hearing, that's definitely not what you want to happen. You mentioned in the beginning, becoming a judge was actually something that you had wanted to do for quite a while. And so it's kind of, you've achieved that dream now, we can say. What sort of cases do you hear? You're kind of always in administrative or human rights based law?
Well, to be honest, I am an administrative judge, and the absolute majority of cases that I decide on them as a single judge. Some of the migration cases, they are also decided by the panels of three judges. But I decide in the most severe and maybe a bit more human rights-based cases, like detentions or expulsions, and the asylum cases, of course. But apart from that, I also decide in so-called social security cases, which are also pretty much human rights-based because they concern life in general, if I might put it that way. And then I decide in what we call in the Czech Republic a little criminal law, which are administrative offenses. So not crimes, but administrative delinquencies, where you can get a fine of up to 100,000 Czech crowns, which I have no idea how many pounds that is, because I was never given that.
I'm not sure. I'll look it up and then I'll insert a number into the podcast. Okay, and so how do you stay on top of things in your role? How do you learn? How do you keep up to date?
Well, like you said, I spend a lot of time on social media, and you'd be surprised how much I've learned from them. Of course, I still read books, and whenever a new textbook on refugee law or European Convention on Human Rights or EU asylum and migration law comes up, I just have to have it, so I buy it on my Kindle. But apart from that, I actually spend a really unhealthy time, amount of time on Twitter or YouTube. On YouTube, for example, I watch lectures given by various professors or practitioners or debates. And also on Twitter, I follow this community, which is called hashtag appellate Twitter. And it's basically a bunch of American appellate lawyers discussing their cases and the way they write and the way they argue in appellate courts in the US, where you don't have to deal that much with the facts of the case, but with the law and also judges. There are many judges on social media like that. For example, Judge Dillard from Georgia. He's like a superstar of, of Twitter. And Bridget McCormick, who's, I think, Chief Justice of Michigan. And I follow them all and enjoy whatever they have to say on social media. So
yes,
that's what that sort of motivates me as well, too. And also, I have to confess, I was an ice hockey goaltender for quite a long time. I still have the sportsmanship maybe in me, and I still try to be best in anything I do. Although I know I am not, and I'm happy to be surrounded by my colleagues, and I still have a lot to learn from them. So that's also one of the things that actually motivates me, that my team, both my law clerk and also my colleagues here at the regional court in Brno. And generally, the Brno legal community is inspirational. It's always good to be surrounded by people who are better than you, because you can learn a lot from them.
Yes, yeah, there's a phrase, an expression, walk on the shoulders of giants or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was also the name of an album by Oasis, which is one of my favourite bands.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. The wisdom of Oasis, we're bringing you listeners. So moving on, what would be your best achievement?
Well, to be honest, as a judge, I'm not sure if I should be looking for achievements, because for me personally, an achievement is every fairly decided case. I don't know in my judicial work if I should even put it that way, to look for achievements. I think that's not the correct way of thinking for a judge. But when I was an attorney, of course, I was happy whenever I helped a client. And for example, the very last thing I did as an attorney was that I filed an appeal on points of law with the Supreme Court for one of my clients, who was in prison for 2 years because he stole a toothpaste. And back then, because of COVID, we had a state of emergency. And one of the consequences of a state of emergency was that, I will simplify it a bit, when you committed a crime, you got longer in prison. You had to go to prison obligatorily if you were a recidivist, then, which this particular client was, sadly, that I must admit. But he stole toothpaste, which I think was at maximum an administrative offense, if even that. But he had to go to prison for 2 years, and I just couldn't understand that, how our judiciary could do that. And I filed an appeal on points of law. And eventually the Supreme Court, they changed their case law. And they said that in this category of cases, the criminal courts should go more in depth, if I put it simply. And they annulled the judgments of the previous instances in the case of my client. So I was happy that he was eventually acquitted. But still, he spent like a year and a half maybe in prison for something he did. Well, it was not a question of guilt, but a question of punishment only. And I just thought that that was brutally unfair.
Yeah, very disproportionate, I would say. Yeah. But so you filed that case at the Supreme Court and managed to get the judgment annulled. Does that mean that that particular case set some kind of precedent?
It was actually one of a line of new cases after the change of the case law of the Supreme Court that the lower instances now have to follow. But I was only observing from a distance because I was already a judge and there was a different attorney substituting me, but nothing else happened in the case after I filed the appeal, and I was happy of being informed that it was successful in the end. But apart from that, before I became a judge, you know, I ran this, I mean, maybe I can call it a blog on Facebook. There was this Facebook page on the public law, and I tried to show people that public law may actually be fun. It resonated with certain students and practitioners even, and maybe that could be called an achievement in my pre-judicial life.
Yes, the Facebook page, is it Urium Daily?
Yeah, Urium Daily, yeah.
There we go. Martin or Marquin can pronounce it much faster than I can. So I had a look at that. It's in Czech, but you can use Google Translate automatically and it translates it to English.
I actually left it like 2 months ago because I felt after I became a judge, I felt that I have certain new limitations that I didn't have before, and simply there were a number of occasions when I wanted to post something and I thought then, that's bad, I probably shouldn't, and eventually maybe I even lost motivation to do that. So I just put it in the hands of younger colleagues who are gonna rock, so
yes,
I hope that they will follow in my footsteps.
I understand you mentioned some kind of having limitations. As a judge, you're supposed to be impartial. That must be a bit of a challenge if you feel strongly about particular issues.
Yeah. It's certainly everyday challenges you have to face. You certainly can't go to every party. You can't pick up all the calls that you get. And there are people you simply shouldn't talk to. And there are things you shouldn't say online to, you know, to safeguard impartiality, and especially the faith of public injustice, which is a pretty important constitutional value, which I think we should all protect.
Yeah, but it sounds like you take your role as a judge very seriously, and that question that I asked, you know, what's your biggest achievement? And for you, you know, it's not really about achievement, but really making sure that every case that's decided fairly is really what's important.
Yeah, I try to understand and realize every day that I'm not here for my personal benefits, but I'm here for the parties to the case. And that's my number one goal, to make them feel that I decide fairly and impartially, and that I work and decide well in accordance with the law. And hopefully, I know that some of them are not satisfied with my judgment because they appeal to the Supreme Administrative Court, but I try my best.
And so when you're deciding cases, how long does it take for you to reach your judgment?
It depends on the kind of case that you have. Because, for example, one of the green files that you can see over there at the table, that's detention cases, and I have to decide in them once the file is ready, where the only thing you have to do is to decide. You have 7 days, 7 working days to decide that. So actually on Monday I will be announcing the judgment in them. So these kind of cases have to be decided really quick because they concern your personal liberty, and I simply should decide them as quickly as possible. But on the other side of the spectrum are the cases on administrative offenses, which are not priority cases, and also the asylum cases are priority ones. And in the administrative offenses, it usually takes up to 2 years. Yeah, those are the most devastating ones for the parties because you usually simply don't get to them through the priority cases sooner than a year and a half or 2 years. But there are simply so many of them that you can't decide quicker and you have to give priority to the priority ones. And it's a systemic problem. I think we should decide even, I think, up to 1 year, and even 1 year is a lot. And I knew when I was an attorney, my clients didn't take that very well, that they had to wait for so long. And the non-priority cases, even the cases decided by my colleagues in chambers, in the panels of three, it takes up to a year and a half or 2 years. And for example, if you want to build your house and you have to have a building permit, and for some reason you don't get it, you file an action, and you have to wait for so long, that's really not good. But we try our best, and even despite these lengths of hearings that I just told you, change judiciary is still above average in Europe as far as its speed is concerned.
The courts are always overworked, I think, and there's always so many cases. It's like the healthcare system. There's always waiting lists because there just are so many cases. And I've been reading recently about the possibility of robot judges. I don't know whether that's going to happen in the future, but
I hope it doesn't, because I think that demonstrating that you're a human to the parties is a pretty important aspect of being a judge.
Yes. well.
There are many interesting books on that. I don't know if you know Richard Susskind.
I do.
Yeah, and I just love his books, and whenever he has a lecture, which is on YouTube, I just have to see it. And he's written extensively on AI in court, so we'll see if that really happens, because he's a proponent of that, and we'll see if he's right.
Yes. So moving on, I've got a question here. What's one thing that you wish you'd known at the beginning of your career that you do know now?
There are many things that actually come to mind, but now that I am a judge, I really do appreciate having the experience of an attorney, working with people, if I may put it that way, and having the practical experience from the very low level of mundane everyday cases. That's pretty important to have, because in my career I sort of went from the top to the bottom because I was in Strasbourg at the Constitutional Court and the Supreme Administrative Court, now I'm at the Regional Court, and I was an attorney as well before that. And I think my perspective to things changed so much during my time as an attorney, even though it wasn't that long. I was an attorney for not even 3 years, if I'm not mistaken. But it was really important to have that experience. And I think, especially for students in the UK or US, but for every student all over the world, come to think of it, what you may try maybe are legal clinics. Students and legal clinics provide legal aid to real people under supervision of an experienced lawyer. And I think that will give you more than a 1,000 pages long book full of cases and commentaries of academic experts. And to have the real life experience, you also get a sort of legal taste, if I may put it that way, and you understand what's important in a particular case, what's not, which is what academics may lose. They may not grasp that in particular cases. So I think the sooner you get to work with actual real people and you have the experience with real life lawyering, the better. And also, I think it was Daniel Webster, the American lawyer, who said that in order to be a great lawyer one day, you have to consent to be a great drudge. And you have to realize and understand that sometimes being a lawyer is really boring and going through routine, like I said, mundane things that are not that much fun. And the sooner you realize that it goes hand in hand with what you're doing, then the better. One thing also comes to my mind now is the story of Robert Jackson, the former justice of the U.S. Supreme Court and was a prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials. I heard this story that he said about three stonemasons in medieval times who were just working on something, just piling one stone on another, applying mortar, and a passerby asked them what they were doing. And the first stonemason said, "Just earning a living." Well, okay. Then the second stonemason said, "Well, I'm just following a pattern that somebody told me to follow, and I'm just doing that." Well, okay. And the third stonemason, he just looked up to the sky and said, "I am building a cathedral." And I think that that's what we should appreciate in our everyday lives, that even though it's not fun, that there is a sort of higher purpose infused into what we do. So I'm trying to remind myself of that.
Yes, it's a lot of hard work and you can't escape it. So what advice would you give someone who's pursuing a career like yours? I guess your career is very varied, but for someone who perhaps wants to become a judge or work in big law, I guess any aspect, even working at the European Court of Human Rights.
Well, first of all, if somebody wanted to, you know, emulate me, well, I should tell them don't. But I personally think that it's important, and maybe it follows from what I said before, to try as many things as you may, because then you will find yourself. Because, for example, when I was a law student, I did this moot court. It was actually not a moot court. It was a moot arbitration in international commercial law. And I thought that I was going to be an important international arbitration lawyer. Also, I had this sort of legal idol back then, because there was this TV show in the US called Boston Legal, and Alan Shore, the character from that TV show, was my sort of personal legal hero back then, and I thought I was going to be a lawyer. But then in the last years of my legal studies, I was listening to the judges who have lectures in our law school, and I thought that those were the most interesting cases, and I started liking EU law, international law, and human rights law eventually. And just by chance, by a good fortune, I ended up at the European Court of Human Rights. That was all really pretty much by accident. You never know where the destiny takes you. I would advise people, for example, until they're like 30 years of age, to try as many things as they may to sort of find themselves and see, just to see what it looks like in practice, to do this particular legal job, because you may have a dream of becoming a judge one day, but then when you do it, if you're a law clerk to a judge, then you may actually realize it's not that good. And on the other hand, you may actually like being a prosecutor afterwards. So just try as many things as you can. You're going to do a certain job for the rest of your life. So really try and be sure that this is what you want to do.
Good advice. So try lots of things. Don't worry if you haven't found what you want to do. Wait until you're about 30 plus and then settle on something, hopefully, that is something that you enjoy and that you're good at.
And maybe one more thing I'm just thinking of, if somebody from Czech Republic, Slovakia, or the rest of the world, other than US or England, are listening, maybe I would also recommend them to go study in the UK or US to get different perspectives on law, because that's also pretty important.
It's good advice to study abroad in an English-speaking country and anywhere, really, I suppose, and get a different perspective. And what are the best resources that have helped you?
The best resources? I like to read. I read extensively. And for example, sometimes I've even found some motivation from or inspiration for my work from the latest John Grisham or Scott Turow book. So I like to read legal thrillers a lot. But they're probably not the best resources. They just come up to my mind because I'm just reading a new book by John Grisham, which is called The Judge's List. And it's about a killer judge. And it's a really good book, as ever John Grisham book is. But apart from that, from the, you know, like classical resources that you have all the databases online and all the textbooks, I really think that it's great to listen to podcasts as well.
Good advice. Excellent advice.
Yeah, and there are many podcasts that I personally like, apart from your podcast, of course. I like the podcast of Jonah Perlin, who's a legal writing professor at Georgetown, and it's called How I Lawyered. And I like it a lot. So that's one podcast I would certainly recommend. I also listen to podcasts on refugee law by Caldor Center in Australia. And and Oxford has the Refugee Studies Center podcast. So I like that a lot too. And there are many legal-oriented podcasts that you get to see. And I just, whenever I leave my office, I just put my AirPods in my ears and I listen to various things. And also on YouTube, you have so many lectures. And I especially like the debates with the legal superstars. And just last week, for example, I was listening to a debate with a justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor, which was on the YouTube channel of NYU, New York University Law School, and I loved it. And also, Harvard Law School has a great YouTube channel with many lectures, debates, discussions, etc. And there's just so many things that where you can find inspiration, how to do things differently. So maybe this is what I would recommend.
Very good. I'll leave those links in the show notes for listeners. And so, and what about people? Have you been influenced by a few people?
I've been influenced by so many, because maybe it's also my sports past, because I always tended to have some idol that I tried to emulate, you know, when I was an ice hockey goaltender. But in the legal field, I have many idols in the Czechoslovak area, but maybe for your listeners, I would name a couple from the international sphere. And the number one person I certainly have to mention, even though many of my friends are surprised when I mention him, and that is Antonin Scalia. I'm not fully on board with his legal philosophy, although I do have certain sympathies for originalism, but like I said, I'm certainly not a full proponent of that, and I'm certainly not as conservative as he is. But what I liked about him was, and just for the listeners, maybe I'll just say that he was an associate justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, and sadly he passed away in 2016. In my eyes, he was a legal titan, a giant, because I think he was one of the people, maybe if not the person who has influenced American law the most in the past 30 years. And what I liked about him the most was his persona, his wit, and the way he wrote. Actually, I actually envy anyone who hasn't read anything about him and they are about to start reading his dissents or the judgments that he wrote for the Supreme Court. And also his ability to explain very complex, technical, hard legal issues really simply and in a human way. And actually, he inspired me, even though I didn't like his philosophy that much, he inspired me immensely, you know, and he's one of the reasons why I like legal writing as well. And for example, you can see up there, I have Making Your Case, which is a book he co-wrote with Brian Garner, who's a legal writing professor. And I think that's a book every lawyer should read, because I think the skills part of being a lawyer is pretty important and maybe still underestimated. But apart from Antonin Scalia, I must say also L.B. Sachs. You can also see The Strange Alchemy of Life and Law there on my shelf. And L.B. Sachs, he's still alive. And he was a justice of the Constitutional Court of South Africa. And his life is something extraordinary, because he was a member of the African National Congress and he fought against the apartheid. But they actually had to run to exile. He was simply a law professor in Mozambique when actually the apartheid South Africa was so scared of him that they planted a car bomb in his car. And he was a victim of that, and he actually lost an arm and eyesight in one of his eyes. And then after things got better in South Africa, he was involved in drafting the new constitution, which is one of the best constitutions in the world now. And then he became a justice at the Constitutional Court of South Africa. And, for example, he wrote a judgment called Fury, which concerns the constitutionality of gay marriage, of same-sex marriage. And actually, it wasn't possible for same-sex couples to marry in South Africa before that, but he wrote a great judgment, which I certainly recommend everyone to read, that this was unconstitutional. So he's also one of my superstars, and there are many of his lectures on YouTube. And, for example, I totally recommend, apart from the Fury judgment, his book called The Soft Vengeance of a Freedom Fighter, which is his sort of biography, which he wrote in 1989, I think, because the car bomb was in 1988, if I'm not mistaken. And there's also a documentary about him, which has the same name, called The Soft Vengeance of a Freedom Fighter. And it's a great movie, so L.B. Sachs. And in order not to have only a male set of my legal idols, then I have to mention somebody who sadly passed away last year, and that is Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the U.S. Supreme Court, who was an icon legally. And you could also see here in her life that she has lived through the cases that she had to decide on later on in her life. She was a victim of discrimination, for example. After she graduated, she wanted to become a lawyer in New York, and they told her that they don't hire women. Okay, so she knew what it was like for women to be discriminated against. She understood how bad discrimination was, and she even represented men who were discriminated against. It's so, so sad that she passed away last year. So these three are probably the most important of my legal idols. Mm-hmm. But I could go on for so long, because for example, of Aharon Barak, the former Chief Justice of the Israeli Supreme Court, is one of my heroes, certainly too. Or Judge Robert Katzman, who was a Chief Justice of the Court of Appeals for the Second District, who sadly passed last year too. And I also have his book, Judging Statutes, over there on my shelf, and it was brilliant. And or Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, John Roberts, now is also one of my idols. And you can't stop me.
The list goes on. I asked before, when I had corresponded with Martin, I asked him, if you were in my shoes, is there anything you would have asked you? I don't know if I've worded that question quite correctly. And he said, yes, why Brno instead of Prague? So, why Brno instead of Prague?
Oh, because it's the best city in the Czech Republic, simply put. There's also a legal reason for that, because from the perspective of law, Prague is actually a sort of a region. It's not a city, but that's just a legal joke that maybe the Czech listeners will understand. But I spent a bit of time in Prague. And it's like my friends from New York say that New York is not the United States of America. I feel like Prague is not the Czech Republic. It's a state in a state. And, you know, the overwhelming and the always present stress of everyone over there. And you just, when you're in Prague, you just have to keep saying how much work you have and how much stress you have. And apart from that, I love Brno and Moravia, which is the part of Czech Republic where Brno is, and it's just so much better to live here, because Brno is both big and small. You can walk to any part of Brno you want. You have this great legal community here because of all the top courts being here. You have Supreme Administrative Court, Supreme Court, and Constitutional Court here in Brno. You have Public Defender of Rights Office here, and people from all these courts form this kind of, and also with the law school here, they form this kind of legal inspirational community that I lacked in Prague. And Brno also has a great gastro industry. There are many new fancy restaurants where you can enjoy your time. And I think it was New York Times, like last year or maybe 2 years ago, which puts Brno in the list of the 10 cities in the world that you certainly have to visit. And you have great places. For example, you can have a pint of Czech beer here in the square outside in summer, and you don't have all the tourists here, and you don't have as many of them as in Prague. And the people are more open, hospitable, nice, and just, I love it here.
Great. I think any of the listeners who are from Prague are probably going, ooh, I love Prague, what are you talking about? But I can certainly say that Brno is it seems a bit more relaxed, and the listeners who are thinking of having a holiday, but of course you love law so much that you want to go somewhere that's really important for the law, Brno is certainly a great city to visit.
I understand. I'll probably get letters after this.
Yeah, you're going to get hate mail from all of the people who live in Prague.
And for example, if any of the listeners are in Vienna, Brno is really only 120 kilometers from Vienna. So you can hop on a train and be here and see Brno for yourself.
Yeah, perfect. I recommend coming to visit, because it's a lovely city. And finally, where can listeners connect with you?
I use Twitter, so that's where they connect with me. And I usually retweet new judgments of the EU Court of Justice and the European Court of Human Rights. Sometimes I comment on them. And I also tweet on ice hockey, which is still my number one hobby, apart from sleeping. So Twitter is probably a place, if they want to get in touch, where they can follow me.
Fantastic. And your Twitter handle is at Martin Kubba.
Yeah, K-O-B-A, that's
it. I'll put a link in the show notes. So, fantastic. So, thank you. That's the end of the interview. So, thank you very much, Martin.
No, it's me who should be thanking you, and apologies for all the English mistakes that I may have committed.
I don't think so. I've been listening carefully. I think Martin is being too modest. His English is fantastic. So, brilliant.
Great. So that's the end of this episode. I hope you found it interesting and learned something new. Martin mentioned so many resources, so do head over to studylegalenglish.com/episode115 to find links, or check out the show notes on your podcast player app to find them. Remember, you can find Martin on social media. His handle is at Martin Kubba. That's MartinKubba. And as for me, you can, of course, find me with my handle at Legal Englisher, or on the Study Legal English Facebook group. Just search for the Study Legal English Facebook group and you'll find my group. So thanks for listening and see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Study Legal English podcast. If you really want to get ahead, why not become a member and gain access to many learning resources? Visit studylegalenglish.com/pricing.